Baby boomers are the generation that invented staying forever young. Thus, the wishful notion, despite all available evidence, that aging will not mean mental faculties faltering or rapier wits a little dull, or that we'll ever have to cast about for the word for, you know, that thing. Patricia Marks, a writer of a certain age who specializes in a kind of screwball comedy personal journalism, decided to take this problem on. In her latest, very funny book, Let's Be Less Stupid, she investigates a whole bunch of the proliferating mind-sharpening techniques, having her brain electrically zapped, learning Cherokee, playing piano scales for hours and hours. She is a regular contributor to The New Yorker magazine, the author of the novels Him, Her, Him Again, The End of Him, and Starting from Happy, as well as the author of way too many humor books. And it is my pleasure to have her here today, Patty Marks. Welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you, Kurt.
So for this book, there are obviously these days, as opposed to even 20 years ago, so many different things and products and schemes to help you get sharper and keep your mind wits and all that. How did you decide which ones you were going to do?
Well, I made a list of as many as I could, and they ranged from things like learn a language, to eat sensibly, to take naps, to turn all the photos on your desk upside down. And so I did as many as I could tolerate. I did some that were just funny so I could write about it.
Eating more legumes, you didn't do.
I didn't eat legumes, and I didn't take naps. And boy, science loves naps. And I'm really sorry because I have not slept my whole life, and it turns out to be a bad thing that I did.
And the ones you decided to do are the ones that you just thought would be interesting and funny?
Well, a range of things that were interesting and funny and probably work because I, you know, just in case this stuff worked, I wanted to be smarter. As you said, I learned Cherokee. And
when you say learn Cherokee, so a Cherokee person.
Please don't bring anybody, any Cherokee into test.
Can you actually speak? As well as I can speak French,
you know,
say?
How well can you speak
really
French?
Badly.
Can you maybe like four words?
Yeah.
I could say everything before you ask me that question. I can say hello or shiyu, and I can say gagayo, which means it means more than I love you. It means I will, you can have my last breath and my last food, but I will not give you my seat on the bus or something.
And of all these things you did, how effective did they seem?
Well, as you might know, I'm not a scientist, so I have no idea. I didn't have that much time to do it. So I just did as many as I could all the time. And then before and after, I had my IQ taken, and I had my brain imaged. And I'd heard how horrible it was.
Because it's like in a coffin with weird and loud noises.
Yeah, but it turns out I love claustrophobia. And I'm from New York, so I thought, you call that a loud noise? It wasn't even up to the level of they're doing construction outside. I had pictures given to me by the technician in the beginning and the end, and they were very gleeful about how much my brain improved and how many more colors there were and how certain areas got bigger. And I told my boyfriend proudly that my brain was 33% bigger in many areas.
Right.
And he said, laughingly, if that was so, then your brain would be oozing out of your nose, eyes, and ears, and you can see that it's not. The thing about MRIs and fMRIs, they lead us to believe that they know a lot more about the brain than they do because they have
right.
the toys.
Pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something I cite in my book where they took a dead salmon and they did an MRI or fMRI with a dead salmon, and they showed the salmon pictures of human faces and asked the salmon what emotions they conveyed, and wouldn't you know, there was some brain activity. So
those were comedy scientists.
Yeah, the very best kind.
I'm not sure I've ever encountered a book quite like this in that it is half actual journalism and you talk to scientists and do these things, and half jokes, half full of these goofy little diagrams and of your brain and parodies of IQ tests. So is it both of those things because you can't not see comedy in everything, or because you just want to entertain people all the time? Why is it both of those things?
It's both of those things for good and bad reasons, probably mainly bad reasons. The bad reasons are I'm not a scientist and I'm not really a hard journalist. This is an area that has news stories every single day, and I can't keep up with it. I can't report on it, but I do see the world as kind of funny. And this is a topic that of any of them, I mean, it seems really funny. I mean, there's it's so tragic, and
tragic because people are
it's not going to end well.
Yeah, you say you see everything as funny. You started out doing humor as a writer for the Harvard Lampoon, and you were the first woman elected to the Lampoon a year before I became the first Omahan elected to the Lampoon.
Oh, congratulations!
But seriously, when I got there, it was a co-ed place, so it didn't seem like, whoa, look, the girl is over there. How much of your experience being in this club that had until that 5 seconds before you got there been a boys' club, how much was your experience a sort of, as they say today, gendered thing? Did you think like, oh, I'm the girl?
Well, it wasn't, and I feel that it shouldn't. I'm always asked, what's it like being, you know, the only woman on this TV show? And I it's just not the primary way I identify myself. And like you, since I was the first girl, I didn't really know there weren't girls on the Lampoon before. I knocked on the door and said I'd like to sign up. I didn't know it was a big deal. In fact, those early 70s were a time when women were being admitted to all sorts of places, but it just seemed kind of everyday, very commonplace to me. In fact, I have a book contract to write about being the first girl in the Harvard Lampoon, and I pushed that back and wrote this, and partly because to write a memoir, you have to remember things. And I thought, I don't really remember really what it was like.
You went on after a brief few years where it looked like you were going to become a college professor or something to be a writer at Saturday Night Live for a couple of seasons. Did that feel like a boys' club more than other things had?
It just felt like overnight camp. I was so happy. Even though people were complaining, as they always do in a comedy job, I was thinking, no, please make us work Sunday. This is so much fun. I mean, just the fact that they had pizza and Diet Coke at 3 a.m. was so much fun to me. And like the Lampoon, it was a place where people were just hilarious. And maybe that's why I tend to write funny. I mean, I came to think that being funny was the most important thing in the world. And it was the most accurate and realistic way of looking at the world.
You wrote a fantastically good and funny piece in The New Yorker not long ago about service animals and how easy it is to call pets service animals and take them places that when we were growing up you couldn't take animals. People can maybe find this online if The New Yorker allows you to read it. But
if they have computers.
That too. Talk about the animals you took into stores and on buses and planes and stuff.
All right. In order to demonstrate what a racket the concept of emotional support animals are, which are, you know, has a very good reasoning behind it. And there are many people who really need animals not to be depressed and not to be anxious.
Just like there are many people who need gluten-free diets, but not most of them
right.
who are on them.
And it just so happens that you can just go to the internet and get a badge that says emotional support animal. And
really, it's like Universal Life Church that I'm a minister.
It's so easy. And if you really do need, as the law requires, a therapist letter, you can also pay money and talk to your personal therapist who's 800,000 miles away and tell them, you know, why you really do need this snake to get through the day. So I took a variety of very strange animals to strange places. I started with a large turtle, which I took to a museum that doesn't even allow children, and they were perfectly fine with it. I took a snake.
Did you have to show your this is my official.
Oh, yeah. But see, nobody knows the law and everybody's afraid of violating the American Disabilities Act. So they say, I'm sorry, alpacas or turtles or snakes or turkeys are not allowed.
And those, and you're not just making – those
no,
are
no,
animals
those
you took.
Those are really animals I took. And then you say, but I have a letter. And then somebody says, she has a letter. And then maybe a higher up comes and reads the letter and says, oh, okay, you can take the snake to that movie theater. So I took this turtle to – fancy restaurants and to museums and to get a manicure. We didn't really get a manicure, all you turtle lovers. Then I took a turkey to Katz's Deli, which is a famous delicatessen
for a turkey sandwich. And you never broke down and said, hey, this is just a stunt for a piece in The New Yorker.
I wanted to, but I didn't. And this is something I don't really like animals. I don't like being the center of attention. I don't like breaking rules. But you do this kind of thing, and then you're just a different person. You detach, and you're another person doing that and thinking, isn't it funny that this person has the nerve to do that?
That's probably how murderers feel, too.
That's my next piece.
Now that your memory is all top-notch, you can write about absolutely anything you want.
And your name is Kevin.
That's right. And Pamela Marks, thank you very much. This
thank
has been
you.
A pleasure. Patty Marks' new book is called Let's Be Less Stupid, and it is out now. If you have trouble remembering that title, it's on our website, studio360.org. And if you can't remember that URL, I can't help you.